for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
First, it was Tony Gilbertson. Then it was the man, Jermaine Hodge. And folks, we ain't stopping yet as the hits just keep on playing. It's part three of our Elk Calling Geminar series, y'all. On this week's show, one of the best at sharing nuggets and sweet talking, the old Wiley Wapiti, our northern Don from Alberta, Canada, the Canadian Slayer himself, Mr. Travis O'Shea, is in the house. So get ready, y'all. The gems just keep on falling. That discussion, our Elk Bros shout-outs, and questions from our awesome Elk Bros mailbox. So, my friends, pull up a chair, adjust your volumes just right, and welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting.
Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting, brought to you by ElkBros.com, with your host Gilbert Ornelas and elk hunting coach Joe Gilly. You want to hunt elk? They live to hunt elk. Their goal is to share with you what they have learned grinding it out for over 35 seasons doing what they love. So come on into camp and set a spell. Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunters.
Hello there, everyone. If this is your first time with us, glad to have you. Hope you enjoy the show. And as always, for those blue collar hunters following our show and grinding out with us every week, welcome back to Elk Camp. And as you can tell, I am not Gilbert Ornelas. Gilbert is finishing up an amazing trip with family in Mexico to see his father's ashes honored and given him an incredible send off. So, Gilbert, dude, we love you, brother. We miss you. But I can guarantee y'all he will be back next time. So with that said, I am Joe Gilia, and joining with me is tonight's crew. We got them from all different places, man. This is awesome here. We've got Luis Gonzalez, who is, I'm giving an undisclosed.
The leader of the
Careful, Joe. Careful.
The Manano Graterón, who is also in an undisclosed location. So you got to understand, when you're in the mafia, there is witness protection, you know. And, yes. You know, we have to put in places at times. And with us as well, I call him Chav, my hunting partner and best friend of 41 seasons, Leroy Chavez, right there. And also joining us tonight from Alberta, Canada, he manufactures his own line of incredible Wapiti River diaphragm calls and bugle tubes, as well as being the maker, y'all, of the Elk Bros signature calls. He has placed third in the professional division of the World Elk Calling Championships. He is a huge seminar favorite and part of the Elk Bros team and our Success Squad coaching staff. Y'all, I am proud to call him my friend, our brother up north, Mr. Travis O'Shea.
What's going on, Charlie?
Not too much. Just stayed alive.
Hey, man. Yeah. And you have been traveling like crazy lately. Doing the,
yeah.
You were down at the World Calling Championships, right?
Yeah. We went to, Big Sky in Montana there.
Montana.
And, I gotta tell you guys, that Montana is impressive. Like, I was like, the first part of it you drive through is a little flat and boring, and then you get into the, along the Missouri River. Oh man, it just, my mouth was just watering, and I'm going, why the heck am I not down here? It's hey, awesome.
Hey, you can always take a move, man. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. You know what's funny? I was playing the Powerball while I was down there, and, the first day I played it, the Powerball, the extra number, whatever they call it, was number 19.
Yeah.
And I got number 19. So I went with my little lottery ticket thing, and man, I wonder what I won. I won $12.
Hey.
So So I put it towards another 15 pack of tickets.
And did you win anything with those?
Nothing.
Oh, man. You...
Nothing.
You could have left a winner.
I know. My wife checked it when I got back from Montana because I was back in Canada already. She says, well, if we win, we're jumping right back in the truck and we're going back there. I'm like, absolutely we are.
Well, yeah. For everybody listening that doesn't know, we don't have Gilbert with us tonight. We don't have RC with us tonight. But that is going to be our crew that is going to be joining Travis and his crew up in Canada for Elk and Moose. Here, man, coming up soon, huh, bro?
Yeah. Under 2 months.
We might even have the Mafia released from witness protection by then.
I hope so.
it'll be a tricky, what do you call that? A tricky escape.
A tricky one.
A tricky
escape.
Send that helicopter down there.
Yeah.
Well, usually those two guys are in witness protection together, where Manano's out. And Manano didn't want me to say, and look, Manano, I promise you, man, I am not going to tell him that you're eating all his cookies. So I'm going to keep that
secret.
I'm going to keep that secret.
So the deal was Luis got some chocolate cookies. So I found them. I'm here in the RV, so I found some chocolate cookies. I know it was here.
That's okay. So I gave you permission to stay in my RV.
That's BS. by the way, I'm drinking your scotch as well.
I found that too.
He's eating his cookies and drinking his scotch. There's a combination for you, man.
I love it.
Not very many good hiding spots there at the RV.
Yeah, that's called
the Gratoron diet right there, man.
scotch and cookies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, wow. We are, like, really anticipating getting up there, Trav, man. And you guys had those huge fires, but then you got hit with a lot of rain, too, right?
Yeah, it's still raining. It's finally starting to calm down a little bit. The fires, there's no smoke or nothing. So I think, pretty sure most of the fires must be almost out or are out. And then we got hammered with the rain. Our rivers came up from, you know, being nice and clear to, like, running real nice for the riverboats and stuff. And
right.
They were literally, like, our banks on the rivers, they're... Some of the banks are 10, 12 feet up, and it's straight up and down. And for 200 yards across the big rivers, that water level was at the top of those banks.
Wow.
And
wow.
just running like crazy. Yep.
Yeah. We had some of that here. We haven't had some rain in a while now. But, you know, what the reason I bring that up is, man, like we said, you had the fires that came through. Now you've been getting all the rains. You should be getting some green happening there, right?
Oh, yeah. It's green. It's lush. I mean, it's thick. The mosquitoes are thick. There's little mosquitoes. There's giant mosquitoes.
And bunch of grizzly bear.
And there's lots of grizzly bears, which I'm finding.
I don't do grizzly, bro.
Yeah.
we don't have grizzly bears in Venezuela.
You'll just have to, like, tuck in behind Luis, and then if we see, like, kick him in the knee. You can get out of there.
Yeah. That's my plan A. But you know what? I gotta have a plan B.
Make sure you don't have one of those chocolate chip cookies in your hand. They'll take you up for sure. That's dessert and then the meal.
Yeah.
That's Luis's bear plan, his Manado.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
I don't need to run faster than him. I just need to be faster than Manano. That's easy. I just shoot him in the leg.
That's right. Yeah. As long, long as you go in the right direction, you got her made.
Yeah.
So, Trav, I'm real excited about having you on this show tonight. You know, we've already had Tony Gilbertson. We had Jermaine on the show. Doing the first two Geminars, and I'm real excited about you because I think, bud, you're an incredible teacher as well. And that's one reason you're on our success squad, that I think you bring it's so cool because everybody has had their flavor, you know, that we've had. Tony has his flavor. Jermaine has his intense flavor, you know.
Yeah.
And you're such a good teacher, the way you do things. And I think that, you know, all those guys do seminars all the time, but
yeah.
It's just a different mode in how people do it, right?
And, yeah.
And I'm actually going to try to tap things from you a little. There's going to be some stuff that, yeah, it's kind of along the same lines. And when people are hearing the same thing, look, it's elk hunting, right?
Yeah.
So there's some things that just are elk hunting. But what I've really been trying to do in the show is kind of reach deeper as to what we're doing, because we take too much for granted. And for yeah. people that are listening, you know, they hear, okay, yeah, well, I do cow calls. Well, what cow calls are you doing? Why are you doing mm-hmm. them? Doing them? How are you practicing? What sound are you looking for? You know, what is your emphasis? What's your goal? So, you know, forgive me. I'm just giving you a heads up that as we start going through this, that we're going to try tapping some of that, because we want people from every skill level to get it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, totally. And yeah, and there's stuff there for every level. And it's, and that's the great thing about elk hunting. Not everybody does it the same. You know, there's that main path that you can take,
right.
but there's so many branch off points that, mm-hmm. it's open to, you know, every one of us can do something different and you still
Manano's
have
to. Manano's going backwards on that path.
I think we got it.
I gotta tell you this, Luis. I'm pretty honest. I believe I'm uncoachable. But Travis, yeah, Travis has been helping me a lot. So he's a masterpiece coaching people as Joe's in Chaff. So thank you, Travis. Thank you for all the help.
Well, and every one of our crew has now, they now have in hand, they have the Elk Bro soloist. Manano has that soloist. We're expecting everybody to be doing some really cool things. So, man, I tell you, we sold out on these boogers, our first set. And
that's awesome.
In like 2 days. And I'm actually going to get our big shipment a little earlier than I thought. So I'm pretty hopeful right at August 1st, we have our big shipment in. And we're still getting all these back orders and stuff like that. And that's really great, man. I want people to get them and get them before they're sold out for the season. And you had me call you the other day and go, Travis, more sugars, more grinders, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Keep them coming, he says.
Yeah.
It's been awesome. And I tell you what, the feedback that we're getting, people love. You know, we had great feedback, and people love the grinder. They just keep getting all the repeat orders. But the sugar, you know, people are just really sweet on the sugar. And, you know, if they haven't seen our signature calls, this is what our signature calls look like. Day and night, black and white, both that New Mexico turquoise blue in there. So we have, both of those. You got your sugar. And you got your finisher, and that man right there produces them and does an incredible job. So,
I got him right here.
So what we're going to do, we're going to start rocking into this, just so that we can get moving on. And Tab, let's go over to the Elk Bros mailbox.
Okay. We have a letter here from Ken Rice. I'm not sure where he's from. And he says, I discovered your podcast 2 months ago. And I have been addicted. I started from the beginning, number one, and I'm listening to each show, usually at the gym or on hikes. So my questions, and he has two. The first one is, I understand cows will go where the best feed is, and during the rut, that is where the bulls will most likely be. Is it correct to assume that cows will give birth also where the best feed is located? And would those two locations be the same place in the mountain? I seem to struggle finding elk, and hoping understanding feeding behavior will improve my odds.
So basically the question is that they know cows are going to go where the best feed is. And during the rut, that that is where the bulls will most likely be. So that sounds a little – so they're not saying that the bulls are going to be where the best feed is. It's going to be that the cows are going to be the best where the best feed is, and the bulls are going to be where the cows are. And then he says, is it correct to assume that cows will give birth also where the best feed is located? And could those two locations be the same place on the mountain? So from when they're dropping – to when they're going to the rut, right? And so the answer is yes, yes, and maybe. It just depends, because all the different terrains and different types of weather conditions, if you have a resident herd, it's very possible, and it's absolutely true, those cows want to be where the best place is for feed, where they can have those calves. In fact, that is one of the things that plays to the disadvantage, in that predators also know this, and you're going to have, like, in those areas where they have the best grasses and stuff, you're going to have bears that are going to be running ridges, you know, you're going to, that are just waiting for, those calves to be born. And once those calves are born and they catch any scent, then they will actually grid search some of those grassy areas looking for those calves. So it's, nature is harsh in that sense, but to stay on the question, it can absolutely be the same place depending on that area, pressure that's happening, what happens with weather. But if it's a place where they continue to have good grass, because when they drop those calves, when they're dropping, it's like you saw your calves dropped in your area. When was that happening for you guys, Travis?
It was right around the 1st of June, usually. Right. Yeah, it's they're getting pretty big already, so they're fast now. They can run. In fact, like little calves right now at yep. this stage that they're at, I believe they can outrun their mother. Like that's how fast they are. Oh, and wow. then the cow can defend the young, you know, like if a bear's after it or something like that.
Right.
But at the first stage, when they're first dropped, they're just scent free. And that's why you're saying the bear's grid check looking for them.
Yep.
Cause they can't smell them. They're literally in the grass, just laying there in a ball, and they don't move. But.
Right. You know, they're, yeah. and, you know, the moms, you know, keep them clean. They're scent free. They yeah. actually get away from them. And when a predator shows up, the first time I ever had this happen to me, I actually came around an area and there was a cow standing there 15 yards away from me. And I'm looking at the cow and I'm looking, oh man, what the heck is wrong with that cow's rear end? And I look and there's actually two hooves and the cow is standing up, and there's two hooves sticking out of, you know, the cow as she's giving birth.
She was giving birth.
Yes. Yeah. And so I sat there, I'm actually standing there, and the cow hadn't seen me, and I'm watching how this cow is kind of laboring, but standing yeah. at that point to give birth, right? And my goal was to get out of the area without startling and causing it to be a problem for that cow giving birth. So I back out. Well, I'm coming through that area pretty close to it the next day, and I don't know if it was the same cow or a different one, but when I came through, there's a cow that starts actually kind of running in front of me and urinating as she's going, and not running in a way that I said there's no way I could get to this cow, right? It was like trying to pull me out of the area with the scent and with its movement. And when that happened and the way it happened, I went, whoa, this is not normal. And I kind of start looking around right where I'm at there. And sure enough, there's the calf laying in some green, area down there. It was actually like some ground juniper. That calf was in that. And then the mama just stayed off, really, you know, not running all the way away, wanting me to continue going after. She was decoying me out, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's one of their defense mechanisms. But back to the question, those cows absolutely want to be where it's easiest for their calves, where they have great food, right? Especially when that birthing is happening. When that's happening in June, throughout that month. Some of them are going to still drop in July. There's going to be stretches. The goal is yeah. for those cows to all drop as close as possible. Nature's goal is for it to happen as close as possible because it helps just by mass numbers for some of those to survive from the predators. Whereas
yeah.
when they continue to string out the births, then it makes it easier for those predators and the percentages to get, you know, to get to those calves, right? So now let's take a look during the rut. Those cows still want to be where the best feed areas are at that time. And the question is, could it be the same place? In some places, yes. And it could be a large area of there that if it stayed real good and moist, it continued to have good grass, the graze was there, didn't get chewed down, they're not going to eat themselves out of house and home. If so, they'll move to a, you know, another spot within that area to be able to have good grass. And they've got to keep it fairly easy for their calves as well at that point. And yes, that's going to attract the bulls. Find the cows. With the best feed, you're going to find the bulls. And if you find a resident herd in June that's in there, I would not be looking too far if there's not, you know, if there's not good, you know, if there is good grass in those areas near that, I would be checking those as well. Because sometimes they, especially if there's water, they have their north facing. If they have all the things that they need for security, for food, and for water, mm-hmm. they don't have to go very far. Now, what are you finding, Trav, in your area?
Well, so our areas are basically, for lack of better terms, they're stuck there. I mean, we have the different hills and the river systems and all that. I mean, they can't just go to another mountain range and get away. So what I've always said, like, if you find cows in the spring where they're dropping babies in that exact same spot come fall time, you're going to see the bulls are there, the cows are there, the calves are there, the bulls are going to be making rubs. It's just, they say it's that natural area where there's all the food. Well, for one thing, when the cows are dropping their calves, those little guys are hungry.
Yep.
So for mom, she's got to be eating all the good stuff, and she wants the best stuff to get the nutrition in her body so that she has the best, you know, milk and stuff for the calf. I mean, she succeeds, the calf succeeds. And that's why they're going to be on those, like for here, it's going to be all on the nice lush pipelines along any of the roads that have like the clover, like all our oil leash roads and all that. They'll plant clover and stuff all along there. And like the food is just so lush and green, but that's what they need. Unfortunately, the bears do follow them. And that's what happened to me yesterday when I put the trail camera out. In the middle of the bush, I'm talking, there's trails that are this wide and that deep, just black already. And you know, it's just cow after cow after cow going through there. Well, that's why they're there, because they're dropping their babies. They're in the thick bush, but they've got a pipeline out to the side where they're feeding on. And lo and behold to me, I walked out and sure enough, I walked into a grizzly bear that was coming my way as I was heading out. And that's what the bear's doing. You know, he was just kind of sauntering along the pipeline there. And I'm sure he was looking for calf elk or baby elk, or maybe he came from just eating something back in the bush. Who knows, right? And he was just checking that area out. So
I believe they're looking for a herd to stay healthy, about 25% survival rate in that area, you know. And
yeah. Yeah, I could see that. That actually lines up with some of the numbers I would see here actually as well. Like, we don't see the big herds of 100 and 200 like what some of the guys see in some of the state. But you know, if we see, like right now, we would see 4 to 10 together in my areas. Right. And then you get down in southern Alberta, they'll be like 20 or 30 together. Right. Just depends where you go. It's a lot more open country down in southern Alberta. Here it's pretty thick, so you have different herds. They could be 200 yards apart, but this herd will have 6. The next herd, a couple hundred yards away, will have 8. The next one will have 4, and they're just all spread out like that. And I think that's how the numbers survive. Like, that 25% seems pretty close.
Yeah. So, Canman, you've heard us say it so many times. Elk are slaves to their belly. Yes, find, you know, that feeding behavior, where they're staying. And yes, it can be the same areas. It, again, it just depends on terrain. You know, when you have some of these high mountain states that have heavy snowfalls and those animals end up following the snow lines a lot more, or they get forced down in their winter range and they've been pounding that winter range, well, they have to migrate in order to get to a little bit better grass. And it's going to be as that snow melts and moves, it's going to produce that better grass and going to stay on those snow lines. And the bears are going to do the same thing. They're going to stay on those snow lines as well. So,
yeah.
I hope that helped you out with that part of the question. Chad, what's number two?
Okay, the second part says, I've heard the Elk Bros mention that elk can bugle soon after an ATV is shut off or a car door is slammed. Can you please comment on elk vocalization either during or after the muzzleloader season? I've been archery hunting during and after muzzleloader, and it seems to take 3 or 5 days after the season before they vocalize again. Granted, this could have been isolated incidents. Certainly, gunshot pressure is different than any ATV, but muzzle loader shots are not that frequent.
You know, I've seen phases where the elk have gone quiet, and I think that's more about the pressure than it is about the gunshots. I mean, there are going to be people that argue that with me, that they hear a gunshot and they're gone, but I've been in too many places. I've been on ranches where, you know, during rifle muzzleloader season, those critters don't shut up. You know, they might, they might end up in a little bit different area when they're there. You pressure them and you get in on them all the time. Yes, I've kind of seen where that can have an effect, but I really think that you just have to be where those elk have moved to and where they are still breeding and they are still rutting. And a lot of that action sometimes is happening at night. They might become more nocturnal about it. And so they're just not bugling at the time when or the place that you think you should be trying to get a response. So I don't necessarily think that it's the muzzleloaders themselves going off as much as it is all of the activity.
I would agree with that, Joe. I would say it's more of the timing of the rut. Like, we go through it through bow season, we see the same thing. You'll have all of a sudden some cows will come into estrus.
Right.
Boom, the bugling's just going nuts. And then you have that lull for 4 or 5 days. And then boom, some more cows come in and bugling, they just go nuts. And I think it's just a matter of that's probably what they're seeing. I know here in Alberta, I've been with guys, we've shot elk in the middle of the bush and they've been bugling. 2 minutes after they hear the gunshot, there's another bull bugling over right there. And it's like they could care less. I don't think they have the ability to reason, okay, that was a gunshot, maybe we should run away, or there's something chasing us. I don't think they can reason that way. I mean, if they hear gunshot after gunshot after gunshot, they may move or, you know, go a couple clicks over or something to the next right drainage or whatever. But I honestly just think it's more about the phases of the cows and if they're coming in estrus or not.
If a cow and comes in heat, those bulls are going to scream.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that their muzzleloader season, it's probably like our rifle season. Our rifle season is September 17th on, so it's getting later. You're hitting the main part of the rut, but then you're getting later in the rut when things are kind of calming down. That's when you're really going to see those lulls, you know. The first week of October, it might be pretty quiet, and then boom, all of a sudden they fire up again, but it's going to be shorter, you know, a shorter little rut. And then it's quiet again, then boom, you might get 2 or 3 more days, and then quiet again. So I
think the better the conditions, the healthier the cows, the more apt that they are to come in estrus as a group, you know, rather than being spread out. And that's what I was talking about before with the cows, you know, dropping. You know, if the whole idea is you're hoping that the bulls are efficient and breeding those cows pretty much at the same time when they come in estrus, and that's going to come in different waves. And if they do that, those cows, when they come in estrus, if they're not bred, well, you're looking at about another 20 days approximately before they pop in again. So yeah, you're not going to have a lot of rut activity in between there, except for those younger cows that are popping in at different times that are going to cause a rut to happen at any time, any place. So when those are happening, there can be lulls in there, and it just kind of depends. You know, we go by a calendar, and we think the elk are going by our calendar. They're not. They're going by their phase. They're going by what's happening according to the solstice, and, you know, and according to what the conditions are for them. I've seen too many times during muzzleloaders with muzzleloaders going off that elk are going nuts. So I don't really think it's that as much as, like you said, you know, Travis, like what we're talking about, as much as the cycle and that happening.
Yeah, no, for sure. And as far as the car door slamming or people chopping firewood or parking your ATV, I mean, dang, I see it firsthand last year, me and a buddy. We pulled in, we parked the quad, and boom, there was a bull coming, and he was screaming, and totally caught me and Jason off guard. Like, this thing was coming. So we ended up scaring him away because it was still too dark and it was not legal shooting time. And he was literally 15 feet breathing down our necks. And we're like, oh, crap.
So, Chad, remember when we got lost one time?
Which time?
That's easy, Joel. That's
time.
So the time we were driving in late at night in the middle of all that thick stuff, and then we were trying to find where we got off the incorrect road, got out, slammed the truck.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one, yeah. Slammed the truck and a bull answered and close by. Yeah.
He couldn't have been 50 yards away.
Yeah, he was close.
Yeah.
Yeah, slammed the truck door and he screamed because it was just, you know, it was prime rut. He's worked up at night, all that rut activity's going on, and he hears that. First of all, he hears the truck going through that stuff.
Yeah, scratching.
Making all that noise, you get out and you slam the door, and he's like, he thinks there's another bull in his area and just screams at us. It's, yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, perfect timing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, man. We're going to go from there. And Luis,
you know what time it is?
Shout out.
For our Elk Bros shout out. If you're new to our show,
time. Shout out.
This is shout out to our followers in a few cities with the most listeners topping our charts this week.
Yeah, you know Gilbert's going to be going, what the heck, Luis?
I'm going to be like, I'm sorry, Gilbert missed a podcast.
Yeah, we miss him.
No, he's been bragging about never missing a podcast. Well, guess what?
I said, well, Gilbert. He's doing the intro tomorrow, but so he
still missed it. I'm sorry. It's gone missing it, you know.
Tough crowd.
Before we jump into our top listener cities, just a reminder for those folks out there that leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or give us a comment on the YouTube channel. And this is important, you have to include your name, where you are from. On our next Geminar show that we have here, we're going to be placing their names on our Elk Bros Spin a Winner Wheel, and we're going to be spinning to see who will win one of our new Elk Bros Soloist tubes. So
cool.
On our next show, somebody's going to win one of these, man. So that's pretty exciting.
That's awesome.
Spin a Winner.
Yep, Spin a Winner Wheel. This week's top listening city is actually a township community that is 9 miles from the center of Philly and is home to several historical sites, but it is best known as the 1948 birthplace of, and guys, if you don't recognize what that looks like, with that yellow and wrapped blue on the end of it, it is the birthplace of Swell Bubblegum. Swell Bubblegum. You know that dusty taste when you first get
there? Yeah.
and it's that sugar dust that you get on it. I don't mean dust as in dirt. It's like that sugar dust when you put it in your mouth. And, it was a major manufacturing center of Civil War textiles and the production center for gunpowder during the War of 1812. And this is Haverton, Pennsylvania.
Awesome. Awesome. So that's gunpowder that you're tasting, Joe.
Yeah.
On the outside of the gun.
Well, hey, you know, it fits. I mean, you're blowing something up, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My daughter's rolling her eyes over there already, I guarantee.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, this next stop listening town emerged at the junction of four separate railroads. Currently, 36 trains a day travel through this town daily. That's a redundancy. It is the home to Global Foundries Burlington Design Center, formerly IBM. And this semiconductor manufacturing company is Vermont's largest employer with nearly 3,000 employees. And none other than Essex Junction.
Vermont. We've just gone from Pennsylvania to Vermont, man.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. 36 trains a day daily.
Yeah. It's so funny that you were talking about grammar, though, bro. I thought that was like, I heard that's redundant. Okay.
You said karma is up. I got a leash.
Nice. We have a leash.
Up next, this hidden name is Latin for body of Christ and is a coastal city in South Texas. In 1919, the fourth deadliest hurricane in U.S. history devastated the city, killing 800 to 1,000 residents, and only three structures survived. Consistent high winds make this town a windsurfing and windsailing destination. It recently hosted the World Windsurfing Championship. This is Corpus Christi, Texas.
Corpus Christi, Texas.
My God, Joe, I thought you were never going to fit. How much are you going to have to speed that one up?
Yeah, you know, it's usually 120%, bro. We're only 135. So.
Yeah.
Now you can feel the pain coming, right? You see that's why I'm like, you know, like who I am.
So my wife was just recently, my wife and Chad's wife, they were down there in Corpus Christi, man, just beautiful place down there, you know, and you can see why if a hurricane hit that thing head on. I mean, it's basically a protective, you know, coastline there. So,
the King Ranch is right next to it, man. And
oh, really?
It's only 3 hours away from here, from Katy.
Oh, really? Wow.
Wow.
How often you go down to Corpus Christi, or do you?
I've been to Corpus probably 3 or 4 times.
And what do you think of it?
Yeah, it's really nice. As a matter of fact, me and my wife, we were talking about potentially just going down there to the beach with the girls here in the summer.
Oh, so awesome.
And they've got a huge, it's a Navy, I believe it's a Navy ship there. That it's kind of docked to where, like, they do tours. It's like a museum.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, I heard through the grapevine that that's probably the only place in Texas that Gilbert hasn't been.
Really?
No way. I guarantee he's been to Corpus Christi.
Okay. This is the final town. This town emerged after the consolidation of two small towns. It is a destination for outdoor enthusiasts. It is home to the greatest hiking and biking trail system in the Southwest, with beginner, intermediate, and advanced trails located in the incredible White Mountains of Arizona. It is a popular outdoor destination with numerous attractions for hiking, biking, horseback riding, fishing, golfing, hunting, camping, viewing wildlife, and much more. This is in Pine Top Lakeside, Arizona.
Pine Top Lakeside, Arizona, man. They just listed everything. They were like...
Yes. the much more must be the restaurants and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's come to Pine Top, man. You can do it all, man. But let me tell you, if you guys have not heard about the White Mountains, some of the most incredible elk hunting country you'll ever come across.
Yeah, it's a big elk hunting.
All right, here we go. We're going to rock and roll, man. Main content. This is our Elk Bros calling Jim in our series. And what we're looking for, like we talked about here at the beginning, is we always tell you to practice your calling. Instead of us just telling you to practice without giving you instruction on how to do that, the goal of this series has been to change that. And Travis, I'm going to jump in it right away, man, because as my family says, we're a bunch of Italians, man. Let's skip the pasta and get straight to the sauce, bud.
Nice. Hey. Yeah. Yummy.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start out. I'm going to kind of follow it up after this with something. And all the guys have questions for you. And we're going to try to hit this and we'll hit the rabbit holes as we do it. But I just want to say, what are your basic principles or thoughts that play into your calling practice approach and goals? All right. Like, what are some of those goals? And then how do you approach those?
Yeah. So how I kind of think along that lines is, you guys know how I am. I'm a perfectionist. So when I'm getting into that kind of calling and thinking about stuff, I'm kind of thinking kind of outside the box a little bit. You know, most guys are working on their bugles and, you know, location bugles and lip balls and trying to learn that kind of stuff. Me, I'm kind of the other way. I like the little low tone stuff. So I'm practicing the growls in your tube. Like, just grab your tube without a reed and just. You know, just, I hate to say it, but you have to practice that stuff. And when you start throwing that kind of stuff into raking the trees and moaning and groaning, that's what really calls the bulls in. So for me, it's all about that off-key stuff, you know. I like to be the perfectionist with the cow calls and hitting the notes perfect with the bugles. But it's the other stuff that people aren't doing that's really calling in the bulls. And that's kind of what I focus on. And it's, I really try to keep it that simple. Like, there's no magic formula to it at all. Just practice those sounds. And it sounds funny, like moaning and groaning into your tube, like we're doing. Mm-hmm. But if you just all of a sudden grab your tube and it's opening day of archery season and you go out there, you're not going to sound very good. Like, it takes a certain, it takes a certain skill to learn the moaning and groaning and then to follow it up with some chuckles. You know, it's like you're stringing along like a calling sequence. So if I take like the sugar.
Now,
like that,
when you did that though, you put a bunch of different skill sets into that, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah. And this is where I'm talking about the breakdown for that. Because when you do it, it just comes natural for you to do it. It comes natural for, you know, for me to do
yeah.
it. But yeah. if we're trying to get somebody how to practice that and understand it, first of all, I want to hang on to that because you mentioned raking. And
yeah.
what I see is a lot of people really don't understand raking as well. So
true.
What I want to tell people is I want you to find a video, go to YouTube and put a video of bull raking a tree. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I want you to watch that bull, how that bull rakes, how he goes down, how he'll work it, or how he'll thrash. But a lot yeah. of times he'll just take and he'll get to where he puts his horns on the side of something and just rubs up and down. Sometimes he gets his daggers into it and scrapes it. Look at it and think about that when you're raking. Try to make those same length of scrapes. Try to make the same ones on the side of the trees with the point yeah. inside of it, and then actually going mm. up into loose branches up there like they do. They'll just get up there and just rattle all of that with their horns. So yeah. I think the observation thing is what I'm trying to get to, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It helps you. I think it helps you get in character. I think you kind of have to get in character as you're playing it, as you're doing a scenario. Like in your head, you have to kind of imagine that you're the elk and you're acting and you're
what
doing.
What does that look like?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
What does that look like? And I agree. I mean, what does that look like? What does that sound like? Not only on the sound that you're making, but also are you stomping the ground? Are you, crashing a tree like you said? But it's just, it's funny because it's like you're impersonating an elk while you're doing. That's exactly what you're doing. But
exactly.
It just feels like more real when you're acting like one.
Yes.
Yeah. So when you talk about raking, I believe there's like two different aspects of the raking. There's that gentle raking where they're just raking nice and gentle. It's almost like they're feeling through their antler tips every single branch. And if you notice what he's doing, he'll smell it. Like if this was a branch, he'll rake on it and then he'll run his nose up along it and he's smelling it. And you'll actually even see them, they'll lick it and stuff. Like he's putting his eye glands on that tree. Like he's mixing his smell
has
on
his
that rub.
Scent gotten on it, right?
Exactly. So yep.
The elk, we killed in Colorado. The antlers smelled really, really good. The bark off the trees was kind of, it created a coat around the antlers and, the smell was just, like sweet, from the, it's kind of like a honey that comes out of the trees. I don't know what
the sap.
Name
it's the sap.
I don't know if that's part of why they do that too, just to kind of get that scent into their antlers or to get the antler scent into the tree.
Well,
yeah,
a lot of that depends on the type of trees in the area, and you can tell a lot of times, by the color of what's happening on an elk's antlers, whether or not they have oak brush in the area, whether or not they have
pine
sap that's mixing with dirt on the ground and they get darker and blacker, or if it's just aspen or light bark type stuff and their antlers stay lighter, because of that, right? But the whole idea is, like Travis has said, it's just like dogs when they're going and urinating on a bush. They want to leave that scent there, man.
Yeah.
So
It's a signpost for the other bulls in the area. Hey, look, this is my area, guys. Like, these are my ladies. You guys take off, take a hike, go a mile over. That's your area over there. But then, so that's the easy, nice, gentle raking where they're not really doing anything. And then you get them where they're worked up and their aggression level is way up here. Now all they want to do is they want to fight that tree. And the more that those branches bend back on them and give them, attitude,
resistance.
I guess.
They're breaking them.
They're breaking it. They're getting nasty. Like, they'll take that whole big tree and just snap it off in the end. Like, there's just a broken off shaft left.
They're urinating at the same time. They're pawing,
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Yep. So that to me is a different kind of raking. That's a more of a showing off to the ladies.
Would that kind of be equal to, a guy just frustrated and then just, having a sandbag to kind of punch and release some of that anger or something like that?
Well, it's more of a chest pounding display type thing.
Okay.
Or, for other bulls in the area, but also for the cows that are there, because
a
bull is trying to always display to those cows that he is the man. He is the one that they want to breed with because it's the cows that pick. So if that cow thinks that there's another bull in the area that's sounding off, then that bull is displaying and demonstrating to them and trying to encourage them to stay
he's
with
stronger.
Him.
Stronger.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. So that all kind of goes together. I mean, that's the whole start. Like, that's the easiest thing you can learn is the raking. Keep it pretty gentle. Even when I'm doing when I go in and I do a little sequence where I'm portraying just a bull kind of feeling his oats or something, or even like a breeding sequence, something like that, my raking starts off really slow and nonchalant, and then you kind of work it up a little bit more and get more aggressive with it. And then that's when you start like throwing those calls in. And I know, Joe, you were kind of wondering at the start, like, where do you start? Like, how do we teach the guys how to learn those different sounds?
Right.
And I think it's just honestly, what I can say is to all these guys that are listening, when you get out in the elk bush, play with these sounds and, you know, do a little scenario and like, just pretend you're a bull that's feeling his oats and, you know, throw in some moans and chuckles. But before you get there, you want to practice all that stuff before you get out there. But then when you do get out in the bush, don't be scared to try it. Like, you're not going to scare elk away. And you don't have to sound good about it. You don't have to put the right calls in the right spot. It doesn't really matter. As long as you rake, do some moaning, do some chuckling, do some moaning. Just put those sounds together. There's no right or wrong way to do it. And it's just, you're going to learn so much. And your whole calling career from there is going to go from just being, oh, I'm going to walk around and do a cow call or a location bugle. You know, that's pretty boring stuff, and everybody's doing it. So if you kind of make yourself different and do some different things, like, honestly, my first opening morning of the season, I'm hardly bugling at all. I'm raking, I'm moaning and groaning, I'm chuckling. That's reverse what most guys do. Opening season, 99% of the guys go in, and the first sound out of their mouth,
it's a bugle.
Ew, ew, ew.
Or a location bugle.
Yeah, location bugle or cow sounds. 99% of the time, it's going to be the cow sounds. They're just... they're just throwing those out, right? Me, I'm thinking exactly 100% reversal. I want to be the bull because I want to be advertising that I'm a bull that has cows. So anything in that whole area where I'm hunting, those bulls are all searching for cows at that time. So basically, I want to be the bull with the cows that the other bulls are coming looking for. So, like,
Travis, is this... this strategy would depend on the season, though, right? I mean, would that be something that you would do on an early season or not? Because
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Because even come like August 20th, August 25th, when we're going to be out there, opening morning, there's a cow waiting to be bred. So if I'm a bull that has that cow, if you're a bull, you're going to hear it. And you're going to be, hey, I'm going to take Travis's cow. She's ready to be bred. I'm on her right now. So instead of having cows and calves coming over to you if you're just cow calling or calf calling, now you're actually bringing the bulls over that you have an opportunity to shoot. And here it's 3-point or bigger. So as long as you call in a 3-point or a 4-point, a 5-point, and don't let the early season fool you, because that's when a lot of guys shoot the biggest bulls of the year. Because those bulls are traveling, they're looking for cows, they're gathering their herds up. That's the whole thing. If you can portray that bull, man, it's money.
So we've gotten more into strategy here.
Yeah.
And which is great. I want people to hear this because I love the strategy conversation. Because even when you're talking about that, I've always told people that when we're looking at first early season, that a lot of people, they say they don't use cow calls. And what I try to tell people is just because I'm using a mew doesn't mean it's a cow mew. You can actually do a little flatter, more even tone mew that's more like a bull mew. Or you can get it through the tube to have that bull tone. Because that bull mew is not the, yeah. It's not that. It's just, it's like this flat tone more of than what those cows do. Or if you give it with a little bit deeper in here. And so what Travis is talking about early season, bulls really, unless they hear another bull that has a cow, that then they're really not that interested unless they hear that. They need a trigger for that testosterone.
Yeah.
They need a trigger reason they want to go look. But they also are very interested in other bulls in the area. So it's a win-win when you do bull sounds or mews that could be like another bull. And then if you end up with something that you're going to change that, like I have done just the opposite of what Travis is saying. I've gone in with a cow mew and had a bull really react early season, screaming back. Now, I never gave a bugle or a location bugle. That bull did it first, saying, I'm here, over here, let's do this.
Yeah.
Introduced, you know, gave that cow back, let him, and he sounds really worked up. Now I know that we're working with a different bull, what he thinks, what's going on, and we deal with that. So that's things that can happen. There can be a cow in estrus in the area that can make things light, yeah, like what you're saying. Or you be that, yeah, right? Okay?
Yeah.
So, but what I want to do is, what I'm going to do is I want to step back from our strategy, and we're going to hit more of this because I really think, yep, that a big part of practicing is practicing scrimmage drills or situational practice, right?
Yeah.
So we're going, yeah, to talk about that. But when, Travis, what I want to do is we're going to go back. And the first thing I want to do is tell people, okay, when you're hearing moaning, when you're hearing the groans or the huffs and different things like that,
yeah,
here's what you got to think about is the attraction of that to other bulls is that they hear a bull that is frustrated. Okay? What I call love-strated. All right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah.
When you start getting those, oh, it's that yearning, moaning, frustrated,
yes,
type sound.
Okay? Yeah.
All right. So yeah, what I want to do is I want to go back and I want to kind of break this down a little bit. You already mentioned being able to use voice in, you know, where you get those different types there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what you were doing though is you were, yeah, adding some diaphragm sound, some light diaphragm sound.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, give us that diaphragm sound.
So when I'm doing these sounds, I'm always picking like a really light calf reed or a cow reed, something that the latex is like really super, super soft.
Right.
You know, cause that's, you're not like hammering on this thing. You're not doing anything special. Most of it's like, I would say 90% of it, 85, 90% is your voice coming out. And then my tongue is just barely putting some pressure on it.
So let's keep the voice out of it. Keep the voice out of it.
Okay.
When you do it.
Okay.
But keep going. Explain. Go ahead and explain.
Okay. And then basically that other 10% is just a light little kind of sound on the reed, so it'd be.
So he's breaking
that's
it down.
Mean.
If you're,
yeah,
listening, he's breaking it down. What he's doing is he's giving you the growl with the voice, and then,
yeah,
he's giving you just the pitch of the
yeah,
the call, and then he's combining them as to what that would sound like. And it's just
exactly
like it's like a bull that's kind of walking, and he kind of wants to bugle a little bit. He's got frustration going on, and he just,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah. So what I would say with that, learning the moans and the groans and that kind of stuff, I guess it would be more of an exaggerated cow call that you're just kind of holding it long, like. Something like that. Because it's very similar. You're just doing the cow or a calf call, cow mew, but you're just exaggerating it and holding it for a longer period that you normally wouldn't. And then you're throwing the voice in. And it's...
Grinders tuning in, thank you for listening to the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Podcast. Our goal is to share our knowledge and help you flatten that learning curve so that you too can have some of the very same incredible experiences that have given all of us here at Elk Bros a lifetime of memories. If you like what you hear or see, you can get all of this information plus so much more from our Basecamp Elk Hunting Training Camp, the first in a series of online courses from our Blue Collar Elk Academy. Our Basecamp Training Camp allows me to use my coaching style and share almost 40 years of elk hunting experiences successfully hunting elk on public lands, as well as over 20 years guiding hunters of all ages and experience levels. This course will be like nothing you have ever experienced in concept and structure, using success-based coaching techniques that will elevate your confidence and skill sets. Our camp will prepare you specifically from that final moment most in your control, those final minutes or seconds the elk is in front of you, backwards through each step and level, allowing you to see, visualize, understand, and relate every coaching point to what lies ahead, the next step, the next thought process, the next success. Because, y'all, you've already been there. You know what it looks like. By tapping my 30 years of teaching and coaching experience, our camps are developed considering multiple learning modes with text, visuals, audio, as well as video. And Basecamp will benefit those new to elk hunting all the way to the 10 to 15 year vet. So if you are looking for that one thing to help you fill that tag this year, invest in the most important piece of equipment there is, you and your elk hunting knowledge. You can find the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Academy and the Base Camp Training Camp at elkbros.com. That's ELKBROS.com. Keep dreaming of the screaming, believing in achieving, and most of all, keep grinding.
Travis, real quick, you know, again, for somebody that's learning, as far as exercises to basically get that muscle memory, that tone pressure memory, would you recommend doing exercises on what you said? I think it just clicked with me because I think being able to hold notes, it really helps you identify the different tones on that read. And if you're capable of, say, you give yourself 3 pitches, lower, middle, and high pitch.
Right. Yeah.
And then you make yourself hold the lower pitch first, then go to that middle pitch second and hold it, and then go to that third pitch or high pitch and hold it. I think if you're capable of going back and forth between those three purposely,
yeah,
I think you're getting into the ability of control that read a lot better. I don't know if that would help or not, but now that I see you doing that, I'm thinking, man, yeah, that's probably a good way to approach it.
That's your siren drill that you talk about, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I should back up a step. It's different from going from a thicker latex read, which would be the grinder, to going to a really light latex read, which would be the sugar. Two totally different reads for totally different
purposes.
Exactly. And for the beginner caller, anytime you can go with a cow-calf read, 100% of the time, even me at a really skilled caller, this is a read that I'll use 90% of the season, believe it or not, versus grabbing, you know, a thicker latex read. Because a thin latex reed is so versatile for making cow sounds, calf sounds, moans, groans, chuckles. And the reason being, it's such thin latex, the sound almost does it for you with very little air pressure. You don't have to really put anything into it. You can let the reed do all the work for you. And by light air pressure, I mean like just a... So you do that on this reed. It doesn't take nothing. You just start that vibration and the sound takes over for you. So like Joe was saying, the siren, that's what I teach a lot of people at the start. It's just you take the tone, you go up to a high tone, and you bring it back down. So... And you can see there, Louise, if you learn that tone, basically you're getting your low tone, your medium tone, your high tone, back down. And just by doing that siren, you're combining them all together all at once. And you can just literally
and then
do whatever you want.
Your brain is listening to and matching the sound with the tongue pressure, and then that's how you get that practice of, you know,
absolutely
kind of sound you were getting.
That's right. So that's the tip of my tongue. I'm using the middle portion of my tongue to the back portion.
Mm-hmm. And for those of you guys, for those of you guys that are on, that are just listening to this, on Apple Podcasts or something, if you jump over to YouTube, you can get all these visuals. I just want to throw that out. Okay. Go ahead.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because he's not actually showing us his tongue. Thank God.
No, thank you. Exactly. Yeah. I'm using my little puppet hand. So with the reed sitting, you know, middle to three quarters of the way on your tongue towards the back, the tip of your tongue is staying down, and I'm just raising the back portion of my tongue, almost like flexing your bicep muscle. So I'm using the back part of my arch, and what I'm really doing, if I show you the reed, I'm really pushing on this portion of the reed. Mm-hmm. I'm not pushing my tongue across here at all. In the Correct. Latex, I'm pressing on the frame. So when your tongue is pressing on the frame, the air is still going through properly and vibrating the latex, keeping the sound going.
According to how close or far your tongue is to that latex, yeah.
That's right, yeah. The minute your tongue comes up and touches that latex, you can see the vibration stops. So yeah. all your sound on this reed is from that latex vibrating from the air pressure that's between your tongue.
And you get an abrupt cut in air coming out because you block that air pathway too when you do that. And then you like and it almost pushes your reed forward when you do that. And obviously it's not good.
You can get a tone with, if your tongue is actually touching the latex and you're giving that pressure, that's that high pressure and why people stretch out their latex in order to get that sound. Now you have to blow harder to be able to create that gap between your tongue and that latex, right? So
that's right.
Yeah.
And the minute, and you'll know that, Joe, just by the minute you feel that vibration on your tongue and people say, "Oh, I can't do that. My tongue tickles." That's as soon as you get that, automatically that means your reed is too far forward like that. You need to take that reed, move it back just a quarter inch at a time. And if still getting it, move it back another quarter inch. And if you're still getting the vibration, move it back a little bit more. You're going to know there's a fine point there, to reaching that perfect little pitch versus all of a sudden going too far back and you gag and you choke. And you spit, and then your eyes are watering, and all hell breaks loose. That's what you don't want, you know, because we've all been there before. It's, you know, then you're scared to put the reed back in your mouth. So it's just a matter of playing with the reed, and that's why kids pick up on it so fast. You know, they throw a reed in, and it's in their mouth, and it's literally just going wherever they need it to go, and they're blowing air out to get the sound, you know, and they pick it up in like 5 minutes. So as older, you know, we get to be adults, we're not so forgiving and we don't try different things like little kids do. So we got to find that spot, you know, we're more,
because we try to outsmart our common sense.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
You overthink it a little bit. That's why I tell people, if you're trying to get that tongue position, just say wish. And if you say wish, it automatically takes your tongue down, you know, and it puts your flat part of your tongue in that position. You get that curve.
Yeah, you feel your tongue come up when you say that automatically without even having the reed. So before you even put the reed in, you can literally just hiss. And once you get really comfortable with hissing, you know, hiss with your lips closed, open them up a little, open them more, you'll get that smiley face. Now you do that exact same thing with the reed, lips closed, open. Open wider.
And you can hear different tones, guys, with all of that. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that arched lips from the smaller closed to a little bit more open to an open mouth will give you a different effect, right?
Yeah. And I was literally blowing on that reed the exact same. And it just, because you're opening your mouth wider and wider and get that smiley face, you're getting the different sounds. So it's really, that's the basics of it. Now, if you throw that into all your cow and calf stuff, you literally have three or four different cows, three or four different calves, all with doing the same little
and
sound. Even, that's the basics.
Even going out the side of your mouth, you know, just parsing out those till that sounds through side.
You'll see guys pinch their nose and they get the nasally sound. Yep.
My nano doesn't need to do that.
Yeah.
So, my approach, I don't know if this is correct or not, probably not, but my approach is, like, I couldn't really get the right pitch, right? I mean, the guys used to mess with me as they called every cat in the neighborhood when I started using the diaphragm. But I almost, you know, when I was a kid, I remember when I was learning to whistle. I would just kind of spend all day trying to whistle stuff, like just songs or anything like that. And just like playing around for the right sound to come out. And then just trying to kind of make music out of it and make, you know, imitate notes of songs and stuff like that. That's kind of what I ended up doing with the diaphragm. I just put the diaphragm in my mouth and then I just started making noises. And then, you know, if I heard a song or, you know, just try to imitate the sounds with the diaphragm. And I think that just me trying to replicate the sounds of a song in my head or something that I heard would help me get that dexterity around manipulating the reed.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I felt that I was doing okay with that, then it was time for me to listen to elk in YouTube.
Yeah.
And then I started listening to elk in YouTube, and then trying to, as the elk were making sounds, I was trying to imitate the sounds. You know, granted, I was way off most of the time.
Yeah.
But at least I kept on making the sound and trying to mimic what they were doing. And I already had some practice with the songs, you know, So I don't know if that helps anybody, but it's
absolutely
that's kinda how I did
what you're saying is right on, because, and let's break this down into steps, right? Because you got, first of all, being able to make a sound, and which we're talking about in tongue placement and everything like that. And then what Travis was doing with his, what he calls his siren drill, is basically what musicians call doing scales, right?
Yeah.
You're doing your scales. You'll see musicians warm up doing their scales, especially if they're on any kind of air armature type control, then they are going to go ahead and do their scales up, down, up, down. Yeah. And then what you're doing is you are basically sight playing or sound playing a song, or in your case, Luis, you're taking that song and you're doing those sounds and you're taking that scale that you worked with and you're applying that and teaching you better control, whether it's Yankee Doodle, whether it's, you know, Twinkle Twinkle, I don't care if it's a rock, you know, thing. And you're actually just working on that control, changing the scale into ability of trying to match something, which your song happens to be what you heard elk doing, and trying to replicate that. Right.
Right.
So, think about this, guys. When we're talking about how to practice, we're talking about first making the sound, all right? And that's according to the air pressure. Then we're talking about working your scale from low tone up to a high tone.
Yeah. Controlling the sound. Making the sound first, then
controlling
the sound.
Controlling it.
Yeah.
And even to the point where, so when you're doing scales, you're starting at the bottom, going up, and you're coming down. Sometimes what you want to do is just try doing, just come out with a low tone and just hold it. Just come out with a medium tone and hold it. Just come out with a high pitch tone and hold it. So again, we're breaking down, giving you goals and procedure for holding the sounds. You can either do scales up and down, or you can say, somebody says, give me an E. Somebody give me a C, right? And you're just holding those tones. And then you learn then to be able to translate that into the sounds that you're hearing to be able to reproduce it. I want to talk about what you said, Bud, though, when you were talking about sounding like a cat, because you were doing what a lot of people do incorrectly.
Yeah.
One of those things to avoid is, instead of letting the pressure cause the sound or placement of the tongue, you were trying to use mouth like
this.
It was like. Trying to, you know, use the shape of the mouth to be able to make those sounds instead of just dropping the jaw up and down. And that's a common mistake, right?
So, so that's one thing we should also get them into the right read, Joe, because like Louise, you probably found out if you were to use this read, this is a lot harder, and probably why you're sounding like a screechy cat or whatnot versus going to this read.
Yeah.
That's the tone is so smooth and different and so much easier.
Agree that there's a lot more control with the sugar.
Sure.
The grinder though, it makes it a lot easier when throwing bugles.
So the right tool for the job, bud, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So
And that's what Travis is talking about. You know, he's making these low sounds, he's doing these low chuckles, he's doing these low whines. You don't want something that's difficult to work with in that. But that's why we created the grinder. That is a workhorse, man. Yeah. So if I'm screaming and I want to, I can get that.
Yeah.
I can still get a cow call.
Listen,
that soft cow call. And it's, if I'm sending it out.
It's almost like it needs more pressure to get the lower tones.
A little more pressure. Yeah. Air, right? Well, for you to get that little higher tone.
Higher tone is what I mean. Yeah, higher pitch. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
But the more you call on this and the more that latex stretches, then the sweeter it gets and the easier it gets for the cow calls, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
Right. So Travis, would you recommend a beginner use a reed that has a thinner latex?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. 100% go with something on the very easiest, thinnest latex that you can find. If it says calf, if it says cow, grab that one because it's going to be a 25 thou. It's going to be a 3 thou. Even if it says that on the package, grab something that says 3,000ths latex.
There you go. I was going to say the 3 thou to 25.
Yeah.
It's much more user friendly. I mean, and that's why we continue to say it. I mean, with those type of, reeds, it's literally, you can make sounds with them right out of the packet and good sounds, you know? So that's what surprised me so much about the sugar was that, you know, the ones that got the palette, the metal palette to where you have to adjust it to actually, you know, eventually get the sounds to sound properly. I kind of started on those and it wasn't easy, you know.
Yeah.
And I was super surprised when, you know, started using the sugar and it was like right out of the pack. It just sounded great. I'm like, wow, you know, I wish I would have started with this, you know.
Yeah. And that's the whole learning process of, you know, unfortunately, most people have to go to the sports stores and buy the reeds that are off the shelves. You know, we're lucky now. We can order stuff online and it comes right to our door. So you can go to Wapiti, you can go to Phelps, you can go to Elk Bros, you can go to Elk 101. You can order that stuff and it comes right to you. But if you're a fella that's not, you know, savvy with the computer or your iPhone or whatnot, now you have to go to the store and all of a sudden, you're facing this store and there's 200 calls and you're going, oh my goodness. Like you're looking at all these, like, where do you begin? Right. So that's why I'll say any package that says cow call, calf call, 25 thou, 3 thou thickness, and that's just pertaining to the latex thickness. You know, if you could measure how thick that was.
That's 3/1000ths of an inch.
Yeah, the thickness. This one's 25. So it's just a matter of, you know.
Wow.
And this one, you can't tell the difference.
Right.
But this latex double what this one would be. So you can't tell. You have to measure it.
Stretch as well, because that's.
Yes. Well. Yeah, the stretch is also a part of it. So that's why, like, if you're a real beginner caller and you're struggling, I guarantee it's because you have too thick of a reed. So if you could go to the store and get something a little thinner, or, you know, go online, go to Elk Bros, get the sugar, it's going to be so much easier for you.
That's why Manano, you think about it, Manano, for you, the call that you liked the most was what?
Sugar.
The sugar. Yeah.
It's pretty easy to use.
Yeah.
But at the same time now, people that listen, when we tell you to start with that, if that's especially for learning that control, but if you go to start screaming bugles on that, then you've got to be buying multiple sugars, because you're going to be blowing that latex out. It's too soft.
Yeah.
Right.
Just screaming those bugles, it'll start blowing it out.
Yeah, if you're really gentle on a reed, like once you get to be a good caller, you can learn that you can be very gentle on the reed and let the reed do all the work for you. A beginner is going to be ramming his tongue up into that latex, trying to get the high tones, not realizing it's, you know, let the reed do the work, let the person do half the work. It's all about, you know, learning the technique, basically, of what you're trying to do. Because believe it or not, I can take one of these sugars and I'll go the whole month of September. Yep. I did it last year. I did it the year before with my Frolicker. I used the exact same reed the whole season. But I wasn't.
Light pressure, light air.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that was going to make a comment on that, you know. And there you can tell the difference between an experienced caller and a non-experienced caller.
Yeah.
See, I go through reeds way more than that
in
a season. But, it, you know, I kind of compare it to the divers. You know, you get a diver that on a dive, it can be down for hours and maybe use half of the oxygen in the tank.
Yeah.
While you get a brand new diver down there and, you know, half hour, he's almost through the entire tank of oxygen. So, I mean,
yeah,
I just kind of see that relationship of, you know, you know how to optimize your sound through your reed to where you can extend the longevity of it.
While me,
I'm not, you know, I'm concentrated on making the sound, yet I'm not efficient with the amount of air or pressure that I put on.
So yeah, that's right.
Let me ask this question, though. When you were trying to get volume on the show stage, what thickness were you using?
That would be a 5 thou.
So different.
So right. Yes. So it's 5 thou or 6 thou thickness versus 25 thou. You're 3 times as thick, but now you can open your mouth big and wide. The other thing is on the stretch of the latex, the stretch is going to be a lot more. Like, it's going to be side, from this side to this side, and then from the front to the back as well. So you have like a 4-way stretch on it is what's happening. The tighter you stretch something, the higher that pitch is going to go. And so now automatically, if you put more air, you ram air into your tube and across this reed, your volume's going to go up, your tongue pressure's going to go up because you're hitting the high note. Now everything's going to be louder because of it, right?
My point being in that, for those guys that I want to make sure that they're wrapping their head around this, that if you're doing light, easy type calls, if you're doing light, easy type bugles, if you're doing chuckles, cow calls, calf calls, if you're doing just light moans and groans, you're not putting a lot of pressure on. You're not doing a lot of work on that latex. So the lighter latex will last you forever. Now, if you're doing screaming, if you're like screaming stuff all the time or trying to do something that's heavy volume, heavy aggressiveness, because I am a more aggressive caller than what Travis is, just in our style and shape. I'm more German. He's more French. Is the only way I can explain it. He's more je t'aime, and I'm more. So, even though in the right situation, I'm doing the same thing, you know, when I'm low vocaling it, right? So, I just want to make sure that they understand that. The job, the right stretch, the right diaphragm for it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so also in saying that, now you have like my style, I ramp into my call very gently and add air pressure into it as I'm going. Whereas Joe, you're more forceful. You have more air pressure right off the get-go, and then you continue that press going.
Yeah.
So if you take like the sugar in my style,
yeah, show your tone there. Go ahead.
Just nice and easy, showing that.
And
so it'll still do it, but you can see how gentle I'm literally just kind of slowly ramping up into it, letting the reed do all the work. Like,
and
the reed's doing 90% of it.
We are advocating in Travis and his style and actually our style, the low vocals and staying down where we're very sparing on the bugling, right? But if we are there, if like I am using location, if I am in a more of a rut situation where things are going crazy around me and I'm just trying to get that response and I basically broadcast a high note, so it's going to be more. So you never hear me going through the.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not playing the scale. I'm given something that I think that they're going to respond to and drop.
Yeah.
So
again,
different things at a different time. So that's why we carry different diaphragms like that depending on the situations that occur, right?
Yeah. And so doing that high note location bugle that you just did, Joe, my whole thought process too, with all the elk calling that I do, no matter what, if it's cow calling, calf calling, location bugle, I'm still letting a quiet one out in front of me.
Right.
At a low pressure, still a high pitch, like, versus reaching out further. A lot more air pressure involved in that one, right? But
right.
I always want to do just my style. I do a short one that's going to reach out 150, 200 yards.
So that I
and then sense. I'll blow that other one that goes 250, 300 or whatever it goes.
And generally, that's what I want, you know, I want to make sure I clarify is that my first calls out there are always giving the total bull sound from bottom to the top when I'm first calling. But if I haven't get responses to my close to far, then what I'm doing is pretty much, because I've already casted my
broadcasting at that point.
I'm just broadcasting far. I'm just like, using that club that is going to just reach, you know?
Yeah. So, because those higher, pitches are, they travel.
Right. Yeah.
Further.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing, but in a little different way. So
That's right. Exactly.
Now I want to go back, Travis, because again, in the teaching part of it, the nice thing about when you're doing the moans like that, right, is that you have air coming out. And so now just that tongue placement allows you, just like what you were doing before, you were given that little with the voice. Tongue is there and you got air coming out that now you can just do that to add that little bit of a squeal. If you'll do that again for them to hear that.
Yeah. And so what you're going to find versus ramming your tongue up into it and getting to that high note, just screaming, my tongue is literally just barely holding this reed up. I can't show you with my fingers, but my tongue is just barely holding it, and it's almost like just fluttering in front of it. Like it's just, it's so light that you're just barely holding it into the roof of your mouth. And then basically you're just, I'll do it without the tube so you can see. You see what I mean?
Yep. And it's just a lower throat.
Yeah.
It just comes from the back of the throat, that, growling at your dog, okay?
Yep, growling, and then you can be, and there's different levels to that. I mean, you can be, like, it's all just different moans and aggressiveness of it and how you want it to come out.
The other one that's real good is it's almost like a bull that is starting to get worked up and he's starting to bugle, but he doesn't quite do it, right?
Yeah. Like a search bugle almost.
Yeah. So if I'm kind of like, you know, he just doesn't quite
get
it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Starting to feel it, or you even have that one that...
Yeah. So you'll get that where they go into the chuckle, and then they'll take it one step further past your first one there, Joe, where you went and almost got to the bugle. And then the next one is, they will be a bugle. It'll be
working it.
So, that's right, working right up to it. Yeah. Almost like they're like setting their voice to what is going to come out in the end.
Right. So when we're talking about practicing, I hope you guys are getting this, man. You've got to practice that use of voice. You want to practice those different type of growls. And there's different emotions in the growls. I can be... I mean, there's different that you can get there. Same thing with the diaphragm, right? So we're talking about then working your scales after you get that, working your scales up and down. Then we're talking about hitting your lows, your mids, and your highs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing we talk about is like the huffs, you know, in as well, just the heavy breathing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so leading into that, you know, using your reed to get those moans and the groans and stuff, it goes right into the cow calling side of it as well. So you can have your cow call. So you're using your voice, just really, throwing your voice in just a little bit. Now you get that more estrus type sound, more raspy, more. A lot of the cows, that's what they want. They don't want to hear. They want to hear. And especially the cows, when they hear that sound at the end, they get all excited and they start calling a lot more as well. So, but it's just learning to add your voice into it just a little bit.
Because actually that sound is a demand. It's really where it's a demanding mew for somebody to do something. When those calves hear that, it's like Mama's telling them, hey, you know, where are you? Right? So.
Yeah. If you're ever fortunate enough and you get into a herd of elk, like when you're walking out, and it went totally dark on you, but you're coming out and you hear cows and calves kind of off in the distance, you know, throw out one of those little buzz sounds, like with your voice, just say, yeah, and just see what happens. Those calves in that herd will just get so excited, and then the cows start going, and the next thing you know, the bull's like, back in the background, and the whole herd is like moving towards you, even though you've only did a couple sounds, they'll migrate over towards you, and I've ended up right in the middle of a herd before, in the pitch black. You can't see anything going on around you, but there's all these sounds. They literally envelop you. And like 2 years ago, the herd bull was even right there. I could hear him breathing like maybe 50 yards away from me. He's like breathing down your neck almost. So, but if you get in that situation, like let it play out and just enjoy it. It might be 5 minutes. It might be half an hour. But really, those sounds that you're hearing, put those in your memory bank, especially the stuff from the calves and stuff. Like, don't just be in the moment and, oh man, this is awesome. I'm hearing all this. Take in each and every one of those sounds and like, you know, put them in your memory. And then that's how a lot of my practice comes out. You know, I'll hear those sounds that the cows are doing, the calves have done, even bugles, you know. There's one bull that I go out and I call with, and he does kind of a weird thing. So I've added into my repertoire every year. I'm listening for one bull that just sounds odd from all the other ones. And there's one bull that I hunt. He has kind of a gurgly sound at the start. It's kind of like a sound almost. So when he bugles, it's almost like,
and so I've heard that same one where it just stayed there. It never even got to the height. It just stayed with that gurgle.
Exactly, yeah. And it's almost like he's like rolling the back of his throat, like, ooh, like it's hard to do it, but
so you mentioned repertoire. As you get more and more skilled, you then kind of learn different sounds, hear different sounds, and your hard drive expands to where you can just kind of pull from that hard drive and using it live. But I'm assuming that a lot of it too comes from your practices to your competitions.
So,
And here's the other question. You know, we were last podcast, we're talking to one of the guys, and he was explaining his training for the competition. And the same question goes to you, is like, is there a different set of goals in how you approach your practicing for competition versus practicing for going hunting, or are you simply just approaching both the same way?
Well, I'll kind of answer that as when I first started learning how to call, I was terrible. You know, I went a whole year and I couldn't make a sound on a reed. So basically you start learning and you start learning with a cow sound, and then you'll learn a location bugle, and then dang, you get pretty good at the location bugle. So now automatically you're going to try doing something else. Well, okay, maybe I'll throw a growl in to the start of it. So you go from doing a location bugle, and you might only have that call for a year, two years, 3 years, and then you're going to get bored of doing that call. So you're automatically going to go, okay, well, I want to do something different. Or it might be through that year where you hear another bull do a sound and you want to mimic them, because that's what a lot of callers do. They mimic what the bull's doing, and it is a great way to practice. So now you're automatically going to throw, say, the growl in. So you're going to go from that high note location bugle to a, so now instead of just having a location bugle, you've got the growl bugle, you know, and then you're going to eventually start learning how to do chuckles, you know, because everybody wants to bugle and they would do a chuckle at the end. So your whole career, your whole calling career, I guess, is basically just adding on top of layer on top of layer, right? You get better and better, and your sound gets better as you're going, because you're working on all those different things, and you're working on your cow sounds. Most people don't practice the calf stuff. I can honestly say most people focus on the cow sound, you know. You don't hear too many people doing the calf stuff. So it's a real easy call to learn. You're just doing half of your cow move. You're just doing the high part of it. So throw that into your repertoire. Now you got a cow sound. You got a calf sound. That's how my whole career has gone. And then as you get into the stage calling stuff, quite honestly, you'll use, you'll use half of that fancy stuff out in the bush. Like, I'll use a location bugle. I'll use your advertising bugle where you're growling into a high note. A lip ball, which everybody does on stage. Honestly, I don't remember the last time I used a lip ball out in the bush. I mean, it's very...
I agree.
The only time I would use a lip ball, it would be a really short lip ball. And it would be because I moved into a herd of cows that has a herd bull. And now I'm like 50, 60 yards away from them. And now I want to talk directly to those cows. And that's what you hear Joel Turner talking about. He calls it the bull calling cow bugle. And what that is, it's a really short lip ball grunt. So it'll sound... really aggressive. So you do hear the lip ball. So it's high note, lip ball, grunt. So I'll do it slow. So you hear the three different stages?
Yes.
And then you throw it all in one. Now, the reason that call is really important, now, instead of talking to the bull, you're basically talking to his ladies. Well, if you talk to just his ladies...
he's going to be upset and come up.
Exactly, 100%. And since you're only 50, 60 yards away, that bull's in your lap at 25, 30 yards in a matter of 5, 10 seconds. Like, it's right now. But I can honestly say in the last 3 or 4 years, I've probably only done that, I can think off the top of my head, 3 different occasions where I've actually done that.
Yeah.
So it's not a call that you just walk around the bush and do that call and throw fancy lip balls all the time, because my belief is you're actually scaring more elk off by doing those aggressive type sounds versus just throwing out a nice little location bugle that just says, hey guys, how you doing? I'm over here. And you get the answer
every
back.
Every season, it might be a small bull that started gathering, and then you may scare him away.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's... and don't get me wrong. I still am under the belief that no matter what stage you are in calling, you cannot sound as awesome as what a real live bull elk sounds like, just because our lungs are so small compared to theirs. But we try, and we do sound pretty aggressive and pretty ferocious at times. And then basically I don't think you're ever going to scare those bigger bulls away, because they know by the tone that you're throwing out that they can whoop you.
Not as big as they are.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, maybe you might scare the little spikers away and stuff like that.
Joe scared one a couple years ago. I think it's still running.
It's still going. Yeah.
So we
started on video.
Yeah, Travis, as you're getting better and better, are you constantly evolving as far as your techniques when you get out on the field?
Well, I can honestly say my calling isn't really evolving, but how I'm putting the sounds out there and what I'm saying to the elk, like, you don't know exactly what they're saying back to you, obviously, but...
scenario and strategy.
Yes, and the tones that you're doing, the emotion you're throwing behind it. that's what runs 100% of my calling. It's all
the role play.
It has emotion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, emotion based role play. And I hate to say it, but those sounds, yes, but those sounds, to answer your question, Chav, the sounds are, yeah, they're getting better and better as you go, but that's not really my goal. They get better automatically just by doing them by repetition. But what I'm looking for is the perfection in the sound that you're producing. So say you're going from like the growl to your high note. I don't want it to be like a nice growl and then into a squeaky high note that breaks a couple times. Oh, yeah. I'm looking for a nice, you know, a nice
transition.
So everything goes nice and smooth. You know what I mean?
So it's all about practice. It's all about practice. Yeah,
it does all go back to practicing.
And see, that's okay. Just, let's take that. Let's go back to where, if for those people that are practicing and what Chav's question, I like that because now where you're at, there's some things that you just take so for granted because of your skill set. But so the goals for those people just starting out should be, number one should be control, right?
Yeah.
And being able to change their call according to length, voice inflection, you know, by adding that and just getting that down. And once they are comfortable with that, then, you know, you talk about your intermediate and your advanced, because you're at that advanced stage where you know how to get from one point A to B in a call, and now you're able to play with that rhythm and when those sounds happen in perfecting that, right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Because your goals now, like for example, you're getting ready, let's say, and we're talking stage, right, in doing that, because that is part of your life. Again, when we're out there in the field, like you talked about the, you know, the display, being able to do that lip ball. And really the only time I have used it, I've only killed one bull that I actually used that lip ball for. And it was pretty much the same thing. It wasn't really to be in there and intimidate the bull that was already there with the cows. It was a moving herd. And I actually used that display to slow the cows down.
Sure.
You know, because I'm talking to them to slow down instead of interacting with the bull, right? So
that's right.
Kind of keep up with them a little bit, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
It actually let me get in a position to be ahead of them, and Luis was with me with that. But, you know, for people, you know, your goal on the stage now to get ready, your perfection has a little bit different goals than just in the field, because in the field there's a lot of that stuff you're not going to use, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like honestly 50% of it is what I wouldn't use, honestly. And that's quite so going into hunting season, literally perfect your calf call, perfect your location bugle, and then perfect your advertising bugle.
To explain to people what that the differences between that location and advertising.
So your location bugle is just going up, hitting a high note, and just holding that high note. And I like to hold it exaggerated. You know, most bugles are 2-3 seconds long. Mm-hmm. So hold your high note location bugle for 5-7 seconds. Just get into that high note. But then don't end it with a big growl or anything on the end. Just ramp it down a little bit. Just, you know, kind of gentle. So location bugle. Nothing real crazy. Now your advertising bugle. Now you're going to want to growl a lot more at the start, and you're going to start shortening up your bugle.
One second, 1.5, right?
That's right, yeah. So you're going again with their emotion. When they start getting more ramped up, their bugles get shorter and shorter. So instead of a long location beagle that you're reaching out saying, hey, I'm Trav, I'm over here. Now you're doing the advertising bugle, or display bugle, as you like to call it. Now you're throwing more aggressive in, and you're shortening it up. So. And so you're ending it a lot more forceful as well. So you got the growl, you're still going to the high note, but then it's more of a at the end. Because what you're really doing, you're calling out to all those ladies, saying, hey, ladies, look how awesome I sound. You know, and like you say, Joe says the cows pick the bulls for the breeding. So if you can sound awesome, spectacular, and have that nice bugle, one of those ladies wants to come over and have a look at you, well, you might just win her heart over just by doing that sound. So.
Yep.
And that's really the only difference between the location bugle and the display bugle is the display is shorter and more aggressive.
And if you're able to do any of those, y'all, you're able to do, and one thing that we do our session in the next Geminar is we're going to talk about situational stuff and scrimmage type stuff and exactly what Travis is talking about here in the low vocalizations, because to us, one of our successes that I feel is we're not the same old rodeo. And, you know, I think Travis uses a lot of those things too as well, because he's in country that has grizzly bears as well. So
yeah,
there's benefits in that you're not attracting bears from far off and you're not attracting hunters from far off as well. So
yeah, yeah.
And am I right, dudes? Is this guy like a great teacher or what?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the calf stuff that I do, I like to have it really smooth and perfect. But let's be honest, I'm not doing a whole lot of it just because of the cougars, the grizzly bears, the black bears.
I'm not going to be using any cow or calf.
That's discourse.
But now,
I mean,
for those of you guys out there that are practicing, those calf calls are money when you're coming into herds, because you can get away a lot more with those calf calls than you can anything else. So,
yeah, yeah, money in the sense, Joe, that everything comes to a calf call.
Yep.
Calves come to it, moms come to it, and the big bulls come to it. I mean, you'll call in a giant 6x6 or 7x7. They're coming to it, you know, because they want to see, well, why is this calf making this sound? And if there's a calf, obviously there's a cow somewhere. Yep. So there's going to be multiple cows. So now that bull has multiple opportunities to get a girlfriend, sneak back in the dark timber, and, you know, Bob's your uncle. So, but, you know, so that's how they're thinking, you know, and that's why the calf call is so darn important versus the cow call. If you, right now, you just scared 50% of the elk away.
Yep.
Just by doing that sound. Yep. I mean, yeah, some of them are going to stick around, but if that cow heard you make that sound and she doesn't like it, she's going to round up the other girls.
The lead cow, she's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's right.
Cow,
yep.
Give them the calf cow. The calf call.
So the calf.
Higher pitch, shorter, not as much drop off. So when you're looking at goals, again, when we're talking about how to practice, that you heard that cow call, a little more maturity in the voice, a lot more drop.
Yeah.
It's a lot longer. Now, I want you to look at Travis's mouth as well. Watch how when he goes to the calf call, he gets more smiley face, letting a little bit more of that air so it gets quicker on there. So watch that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do the smiley face, but I'm also putting more pressure on the latex to get the tone a little bit higher because I want it to be at the top end of that cow that starts the calf. So cow. Half?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, see that.
And basically, it's just a little bit of air.
Yep.
I like the smiley face.
That's all you're doing. Yeah. That's the easiest way to learn how to do it, because your mouth automatically has to go into your position.
Yeah.
Quick question. Joe, I know you have a lot of, you know, media and videos and stuff like that in the academy. I know you've made a lot of upgrades to the academy as well. Is there a section where people can actually listen to the sounds? And I think there is, to the, all the sounds that elk make, as far as like a new caller to actually just be able to click on, you know, regular cow call, cow in estrus,
So
like
we're actually working on that being added right now.
Yes.
Right. Currently what we have is making those sounds myself and letting them hear that and talking about those sounds is what it is. So they can actually hear them and do it like that. Yes.
Yeah. But I was thinking, along those lines, but then have the actual elk sounds making those sounds to where you
That's where we're working to add that.
Progress to the next step after you learn how to make them from you explaining to them being able to.
Great point and a great addition that we're trying to put in there because I think
The other comment I was going to make is, Travis, you mentioned something earlier in the podcast today. You said, don't be afraid of throwing calls out there. You're not really going to scare a lot of stuff away. You just get yourself to trying and stuff like that. And I can relate to that because I know I've said it a few times. It's like initially I was just afraid of, making sounds that would scare animals away But then I got to thinking, like, man, if Manano is not afraid of making any calls, nobody should be afraid of making any calls out on the woods. So I just want to put that out there for the callers. To make sure you will never be worse than Manano.
Actually, I wasn't.
Manano's
afraid to make some calls. I'm afraid of make movement. For example, if I go inside of the woods and start breaking and making, noise and stuff before even think about it and even see if there's elk over there.
Yeah.
So that's my concern. That's why I just, depart from most of the guys. I'm always careful making movements, making sounds. I rather wait a little bit, listen to the woods and then make my move.
And there's nothing wrong with that at all. The listening and
it's just counterintuitive to what you, the style of hunting you were raised.
Yes. That's my point. I'm not saying it's wrong otherwise, but, it's the way I grew up.
So the thickness of the woods and the terrain, how it goes up and down, will always dictate how much movement and how much sound you can get away with. Because, if you're worried about spooking something and there's a lot of visual area, then there's a good chance of that. But if it's a very thick or the terrain is up and down and it changes like that, then it's a whole different ball game. So
So that's what Manano's talking about, is more tactic infused, I would say. And that's kind of my take on the tactic as well. Before I go in and I just start making any sound, first off, I'm sitting there listening and I'm surveying the situation, but I'm also setting it all up. I know this is getting more advanced than what we want to talk about, but I'm trying to set up the shooting position before you even make any sounds. Because the minute you make a sound in the elk woods, if there's elk in the area, you totally have a very good chance of calling those animals to your location.
Yes, sir.
So the first step, like Manano was saying, survey the situation, set up your shooting location, then move back, do your calling, let it all unfold. But if you just walk into that bush and you don't do anything, you just stand there and you survey the situation going, oh, those are nice trees. Oh, that'd be a good spot for a tree stand. And if you don't initiate the calling, nothing's going to happen.
Right.
So even if you're the poorest caller in the world, just by going out there and trying to do a cow sound or a calf sound or throw out whatever, even if it's a feeble attempt at a location bugle, that's 100% better than just going in that bush and not doing anything whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because I can guarantee you, if you go in that bush and you don't do anything, nothing's going to happen. But if you go in that bush and try something, something's
going to happen. There might be an exception to that rule, Travis. If you go and take a dump and you don't take your bow with you, you will feel.
That's a bad side.
That is a great, if we're going to talk about ends, I guess that's what
That's a good ending.
That's a good ending right there. So we leave some people with something to think about, man. Hey, Travis, thanks, man, for doing our third one with us. That's why, brother, we love you and we love having you with us. And people, this is not going to be the last time you're going to hear from Travis. He's going to be doing a lot with us. We are, we're connected. He's part of our team. He's part of our staff and, we love having him. He's going to be on a lot of shows with us when we have other people as well. He adds so much to this. So
he will be making paella with me up there.
Yeah. Manano already told me he's my caller this year.
Travis, don't be
kidding. It's going to be awesome.
All right.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Don't be counting on that paella. It was promised last year and it never took place. It never happened.
Didn't come out? Oh, man. This year for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, guys, like what we're doing, please subscribe, rate, and review. If you want to do that, you have to go to Apple Podcasts or iTunes to review. And please be sure, y'all, to include your name, where you're from, and get into our drawing. Next time we're going to do that spin a winner wheel, and one of y'all going to get an Elk Bros soloist grunt tube out of that. Okay? And just a reminder, if any of you guys out there want your question answered on our show, just send your question to info@elkbros.com. That's info@elkbros.com. And y'all, I'm not in Texas and neither are they. We're just saying, man, you know, while you're out there, guys, this September's coming. Keep dreaming of the screaming. Keep believing in achieving. But most of all, whatever you do, keep grinding. Hey, guys, that was a good one tonight. Good night to everybody. Yeah. Good night to you guys. Thanks for being
here. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Travis.
Awesome as always. Yeah, every time it's a pleasure.
Take a good look at me. I'll be gone for a while in the backcountry, where peace of mind is destiny. I hit the trail with a pack on my back, mountain house meals in a bivy sack. I'm gone for a while, baby. Take a good look at me. Missing you and you'll be missing me. When you lay your head down at night, just know your daddy's safe in the bright moonlight. September sky, as far as the eye can see.
I can see the mountaintop with the highest peak and no backdrop. It's a long way up from here and a long way down. Tomorrow.